As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the Forum Club. I'm Bill Oram, joined by Jovan Buha. Lakers wrapped up their longest road trip of the season. 4-3, Jovan. No LeBron, no AD, intermittently players in and out of the lineup. Markieff Morris missed a game. Wesley Matthews missed a couple games. Andre Drummond's toenail disappeared somewhere along the way. If you're the Lakers, you're feeling pretty good about this result, aren't you?
This is an emphatic win. We had this discussion a couple of weeks ago, Slater and I, and I think we were ballparking at like 1-6 to 3-4 as a realistic outcome. And I think we all were in agreement that 2-5 was probably the most realistic, and they completely exceeded expectations. And I do think, to not play Debbie Downer, but I think the schedule ended up kind of breaking out in their favor a little bit with just some of the opponents being shorthanded. And of course the Lakers are shorthanded, but I think if they had played every team at full strength or close to full strength, I think their record is a little bit worse. But that's the breaks of the game. And, the Lakers definitely had several breaks. I mean, I put it in my story that went up today, and I put it in the podcast last night. Like, the list of injuries that the Lakers have had, not just this season, but specifically, like, if you're including AD and LeBron, who've been out for a while, and then Jared Dudley, who's also been out. But the rest of the available guys, when you look at it, the only two guys who have not suffered some type of injury over the last 2 weeks are Montrezl Harrell and Ben McLemore. And Ben McLemore has not been with the team for the entirety of that time. And Montrezl Harrell is the only guy who's been, healthy, but he also had a game that he only played 2 minutes and was ejected. So, and then THT's been healthy, but he was suspended for that game. So, I mean, just the amount of time that it's not been like one guy, two guys, three guys. It's been literally every single player available on the roster has suffered some type of injury or situation that has caused them to miss time. And for them to go 4-3 over this stretch, on this trip, 6-7 since LeBron's injury, to have the second best defense over that period, like, that's just amazing. It's incredible. And looking out for me, the most positive trend that I could take away from this whole period is that them having that an elite of a defense, missing their two best defenders, in my opinion, and I think in most people's opinion, that just, I think, bodes incredibly well. You add LeBron and AD back to this, the offense is going to get much better. They're going to figure that out. It might not be great, but it just has to be good enough. And then the defense is just amazing. They still have the league's best defense, second best over this period. Like, we were going through that weird period where I think we all were waning a little bit with our optimism in the Lakers. And it was just like, are they going to be healthy? And they're not playing well. And for me, like, this period is kind of flipped that, where I'm just like, if this team is healthy, I still consider them the favorites, the clear favorites. Like, I would put them over Brooklyn. Like, I'll put them over anybody, because I think when you have a defensive identity the way that they do, plus the star power offensively, like, I just don't see how they shouldn't be the favorites, as long as they're healthy, which of course is a big if, I guess, depending on what happens with LeBron and AD.
So you kind of hit the nail on the head, I think, but Andre Drummond said the same thing the other night about the lineup, going back to kind of your first point, where he said, we're playing with a different five every night when we're stepping on the court. And I think the fact that they were able to consistently summon the effort that was required to be in these games. I mean, that Miami game, they had no business being in. And, you know, I thought acquitted themselves very well. That's a loss, but like, that's pretty close to suddenly being a, you know, a 5-2 road trip with that game. And so I thought, you know, strong trip from the Lakers, good chance for guys like Andre Drummond and Ben McLemore to get their feet wet. But now really everything is going to, all attention turns to the return of Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Now, there was a report from ESPN over the course of this road trip that, you know, AD was maybe 2 weeks away and LeBron's still three. The part that was interesting there was the AD timeline, because we just haven't gotten a timeline on AD. LeBron, that's about what we expected going into this. We always said this was going to be around a 6-week injury. And that still seems, you know, to be the case, where I wouldn't expect to see him before, you know, the start of May. The Lakers have a game on May 2nd, you know, maybe in there. AD's the interesting one. And Frank Vogel said, you know, he'd be reevaluated when they got back to L.A. It's going to take some time, I think, to get him up to speed where he has been. He's missed, Jovan, maybe you have the number, but he's missed, you know, more than 2 months at this point. I guess today is actually the 2 month mark since he hurt himself against Denver. So to me, it's going to take a little bit of time to get him back up into conditioning and up to speed before you start throwing him into games. So the questions really the Lakers are facing now, when do you get those guys back? How much time do they have to build chemistry with these new guys and reestablish chemistry with the guys who've been playing? And then what does the rotation and everything look like going into the playoffs? I mean, I feel like the Lakers are going to have a real mad dash getting into the postseason, not just for seeding, but to kind of reacclimate to one another. What do you think is going to be the most important thing for the rest of the Lakers when AD returns? Because I think we can assume that there's going to be at least a small stretch where the Lakers are going to have AD back, but not yet LeBron.
Yeah, just to follow up on the point you just made, he's missed 33 games this season. It doesn't feel like that. He had missed five before this injury, so he's missed 28 consecutive games. We've gone, as you said, 2 months without seeing Anthony Davis play basketball. I mean, it feels like that, but it also doesn't feel like that. But I think when he returns, the thing I'm most interested in is the offensive fit with him and Andre Drummond, because in theory, I know it worked for the Lakers last season playing AD next to a more traditional, you know, paint bound center, but at the end of the day, Anthony Davis played 60% of his minutes at the five in the playoffs. And he did, I guess, kind of play more minutes in the playoffs with Dwight than with JaVale. But Dwight was also a guy who kind of was moving around, setting screens, hanging out in the dunker spot. Like, I think he's a little bit more active off the ball than Andre Drummond is. You know, Drummond is a guy we've seen likes to post up. So was Dwight. But I think Drummond is a guy who's 27, still relatively in his prime, coming off a couple recent All-Star appearances. Like, in the grand scheme, Dwight is the more accomplished player. Like, I'm not making that comparison, but at the current stages of their career, Dwight was in a, I have to do whatever it takes to stay in the league type situation, where Drummond, I think, is in a little bit of a different spot. And clearly the Lakers promised him he'd be the starting center. They have run several post-ups for him. I just looked this up on Synergy. With the Lakers, he's averaging 0.5 points per possession on post-ups, which is in the third percentile in the NBA. So just just awful. And you know, we've seen it where he gets the ball in the post, he turns it over, you know, he dribbles it off his foot, he gets stripped, he forces up a contested shot that misses. And, you know, that's kind of been my only criticism of him, is just too much post play. But I think just figuring out the spacing with those two and the offensive fit is going to be really interesting, because if it doesn't work, I mean, you can't just go to AD more at the five, but I think that's going to put the whole center spot, which we've been talking about for, you know, what feels like months now, in a weird spot. Because if AD is playing 25 to 30 minutes at the center spot, like, you only have 18 to 20 minutes for Drummond, Trez, and Mark. And maybe Trez goes to the floor a little bit. Yeah, I guess Mark's out. Although I don't think he should be. And you and I were texting about that.
But right now he is out.
He is out. But even so, 20 minutes for Drummond and Trez isn't much either. Both of those guys expect to be playing 20 plus minutes. So it puts you in an interesting spot if the Drummond AD fit isn't clean. And we've seen a lot of AD next to Mark, which I think makes a lot of sense, just because Mark can space the floor. He operates above the arc, gives AD inside the arc. We have seen some AD Trez, but I think AD Drummond is going to be just a fascinating thing for me of just how do those two look together? How do they fit? Is there a way the Lakers can use Drummond to still give AD spacing on the block and in the mid post and the elbows? Like, how does that spacing look? So that to me is the most interesting thing, I think, for me, because everything else, like, defensively, we know AD is going to fit in seamlessly. He's the defensive captain along with LeBron. I don't have as much concern with that. But also maybe just how does AD look, and can he get back to the AD of the bubble of Orlando, right? Because know, I think the Lakers ceiling, when AD's at that level, I think they're unbeatable. Like, you know, put them up against anybody, I just don't see how they lose. When he's at the version of him we've seen earlier this season, I think they're slightly more beatable. And that to me maybe is more, even more interesting than the Drummond fit.
So Jovan, you are completely sold that the Lakers at strength, if AD is the AD we saw last year in the playoffs, are not just favorites. You've got them as prohibitive favorites.
Well, I do think Brooklyn could beat them. I think Brooklyn's really good. Like I'm not trying to downplay them. I do think that based on what I've seen in the two matchups, and it's hard to take away too much because neither team was whole, and you know, AD didn't play in either one of them. I just think the Nets defense is so bad. They have a similar but even, you know, worse problem than the Lakers, where, you know, the Lakers have had to make some offense defense kind of trade-offs with like Trez versus Mark. But with the Nets, it's like, you know, they signed LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin, like kind of outbid Miami or the Lakers or whoever else was in the mix. And I think those guys being former multi-time All-Stars, like, you know, Blake Griffin, I think is probably going to be a future Hall of Famer, or at least in the conversation. LaMarcus Aldridge quietly kind of has a case as well, based on some of the other people that have made the Hall. Like, those guys, I don't think are just going to be, I think they're okay with smaller roles, but I don't think they're okay with just being benched outright. So you have to find a certain amount of minutes for those guys. And I felt like when those guys were on the floor, the Lakers got to the rim pretty much whenever they wanted. And really for the Nets, like against the Lakers, you probably need more DeAndre Jordan or Nicholas Claxton. And I don't know if those guys are going to get enough minutes. So I just think matchup wise, the Lakers have the personnel to match up with the Nets perimeter stars. The Nets don't have the personnel to match up with LeBron and AD, in my opinion. KD can't guard both of them. He's probably the best guy to put on one of the two. But after that, like, I forgot how good of a game LeBron had that first game, but he was getting to the rim literally whenever he wanted against the Nets in that first game. He shot 14 of 23, just absolutely roasted Jeff Green, was pounding him, you know, shoulder in the chest, getting to the rim, layup, layup, layup. I just don't see how Brooklyn, like what they can do to defend that. I mean, maybe it's going zone. I don't really know. But, and then aside from Brooklyn, like, I guess the Clippers are in the mix, maybe the Bucks, the Sixers, but I still like the Lakers more than those teams. So I don't know. Prohibitive might be strong, but I do think their status is the favorites to me as long as they're healthy.
So thing that we need to adjust from past conversations about the Lakers playoff path is the West. The West has changed and been reshaped pretty dramatically since our last conversations about this. And that's in the form of the injury, the ACL injury to Jamal Murray. The Lakers right now, I believe, are sitting in fifth in the West. A series with the Nuggets in the first round, you know, looked pretty likely. Now, that is not the concerning matchup that it might have been before. I mean, the Nuggets still have the guy who I think is probably the MVP of the league this year in Nikola Jokic. Yeah. That is a tough matchup, but one the Lakers have overcome before. The Nuggets are a little different from last year when the Lakers took care of them in five games. But 48 hours ago, if we were talking about the Lakers playoff path, we would have been sitting here saying it's basically a Western Conference Finals caliber matchup all three rounds just to get through the West. And I don't think you can say that anymore now if they do in fact encounter Denver without Jamal Murray. And in fact, I would say, let me pull the standings up here to make sure I'm right with what I'm saying here. But I really think that, you know, the Clippers and the Jazz are the two teams that you worry about in the West. You know, the Suns are fascinating, but I don't see them as a real threat to beat the Lakers, to actually beat them in a seven-game series. It'd be a fun series. But the Lakers are in fifth right now. The Nuggets are in fourth. And you would have looked at that going into the playoffs, that it, you know, like that is an absolute mammoth tilt in the first round. Now it isn't. So how do you look at the Jamal Murray injury, Jovan, through the Lakers' lens? Does that help them in ways beyond just having a slightly easier path, assuming that's the matchup? Or do you not think that it matters who they play or how they play them?
I think that, as long as they're healthy, there are different, like, more difficult paths than others. I think playing the Clippers in the first round is not ideal, right? I think that's a 6 or 7 game series. I think the Lakers could lose that series. I would pick them over the Clippers, but if you told me the Clippers won that series in, you know, 6 or 7, like, I'm not completely shocked. So for me, it's specifically pushing off the Clippers matchup for as long as possible. And it does look like, though, for the Murray component, I mean, there's a chance that I think that affects Denver in at least a few games, right? Like, you know, Jamal Murray is really, really good. He's their second best player, was playing progressively better throughout the season, was starting to regain his bubble form. And I think to lose that player, like, Denver's deep, and we've seen this with them in previous seasons where they always have like one or two key guys down, and they just have the depth to withstand that in the regular season. But I think it affects them where, you know, they probably lose 2 to 4 more games in the rest of the regular season. That can be the difference between the 4 seed and the 6 seed. So I'm actually looking at it now, and I just wrote this, like, I think the Lakers, it flipped from like as recently as even a few days ago, we were talking about, are they going to be in the play-in? Are they going to be the 7 seed?
Right.
You know, they've won 2 of their last 3, 3 of their last 5. And that just little key stretch there, they look like they could be the 4 seed and either playing a Denver team without Jamal Murray, which significantly shifts the way we view that matchup, or a Portland or Dallas team who, while still good, they just don't scare you as much as Utah or the Clippers or Phoenix, right? So it's still a tough matchup. You know, Dallas or Portland could push the Lakers to 6. I'm personally more afraid of Dallas. I saw what Luka did to the Clippers last year, and the Clippers on paper were tailor-made to defend Luka Doncic with Kawhi, with PG, with Pat Beverly. He roasted all of them. None of those guys could guard him. And when I look at, you know, that potential matchup for the Lakers, I'm like, Luka's going to get his, and he's good enough to get his and create for everybody else. So if we knew a week ago, you know, they're not going to be in the 7 seed, they're going to be the 4 seed and have either a compromised Denver team or Portland or Dallas, like, you take that if you're the Lakers. So next week we could be having this conversation much differently, where they lose to Boston, they lose to Utah twice, like, you know, they're falling down the standings, and maybe this is a temporary kind of, you know, good feeling around the team until AD or LeBron is back. But I think kind of bigger picture, this is at least making the first round easier. The second round is going to be tough, because if they get in the 4 or 5, they're going to have to play Utah, and then they're going to have to play Phoenix or the Clippers in the conference finals. Like, that's still a tough path. But at least in the first round, as you're still getting those reps together, which is going to be important for the Lakers, like, having an easier opponent, again, be it a compromised Denver team or Portland or Dallas, who I just don't think are on the level of those other West teams, that's another win, I think.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So I thought last year when the Lakers played the Blazers in the first round, it wasn't that, you know, the Blazers were going to beat them that made that such an interesting matchup. It's that playing Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, and Nurkic came back, obviously, you had to be locked in. It required a level of focus that maybe you wouldn't have required if it had been Memphis or New Orleans in the 8 seed last year. And I feel like there's maybe something to be said for Denver providing the same kind of challenge without Jamal Murray. And I don't want to diminish what Denver does. You know, that is a team that I think you could have rightly said was in the championship mix healthy. They just aren't without Jamal Murray. I mean, he just handles, you know, so much of that secondary load for them that I don't think they have anybody who can step up in kind of that primary playmaker spot from the perimeter. I mean, Monte Morris has established him as a solid pro, you know, but like Campazzo is not Wally Pipping Jamal Murray. So the kids don't even get that reference, Jovan. But I do think that for the Lakers, I mean, that matchup almost would be the best case scenario, because you're going to get a championship level of preparation and, you know, sort of attack from the Nuggets, but they're not going to have the firepower to keep up. So even if it's a 5-game series, you know, LeBron, AD, Drummond, you know, all those guys who are still kind of getting reacclimated are going to be able to sharpen their knives against each other or with each other against the Nuggets. So I agree. And then maybe, like you said, Jazz in the second round. And then, you know, depending on, I think that series mostly just comes down to how you defend the three and how the Jazz shoot the three, because the Jazz have become one of the, you know, the all-time most prolific three-point shooting teams. And if they are hot and they're shooting, you know, 45% for three over the course of a series, you're probably going to lose, because the Jazz are built to beat anybody as long as they can play their game. But so 3-point defense will be huge. And then the conference finals and so on. Last night, Jovan, the Lakers beat the Charlotte Hornets. Solid win, not terribly surprising, the result. But the last minute of that game was interesting because it kind of was the Alex Caruso show. And we've seen this from him before where he has done, you know, where he's had these late game heroics that maybe don't show up in the box score. You know, he had the play where he got back defensively against Jaylen Brown in Boston that was obviously much ballyhooed. And he had some of the same last night. There was a rebound. He had a defensive possession against one of the Hornets guards that, you know, forced him into a bad shot at the end of the shot clock that Frank Vogel was praising. But he also kind of knocked down the three to ice the game. And it got me thinking, you know, last year, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was arguably the Lakers' third best player in the playoffs and certainly in the finals. Rajon Rondo ended up being tremendously valuable, even though at one point it looked like he may not even be able to play again after breaking another bone in his hand. If you had to guess right now, who will be the Lakers' most important role player in the playoffs? Is it Alex Caruso? Does it need to be a certain player for the Lakers to win? We didn't game plan any of this, by the way. I'm just throwing questions at you that I like to exercise your brain.
Are we deeming everyone that is not LeBron and AD a role player? Or how?
I think
how
for this exercise, we can. Players? Sure, sure.
Okay, then I think it's Dennis. I think it's Dennis, followed probably by KCP as a close second, and then I'd put Alex third. For me, that the centers aren't as important, just because I think
AD is going to play all those minutes.
AD is going to play those minutes, and if one of them is struggling, you have three options, and you have the optionality to go to different looks depending on the opponent. So like, I think Mark's probably out of the rotation, but if you're playing Denver, I think Mark should be in the rotation. Like, you know, no that's question. A series where, you know, Trez is probably getting the boot and just not playing. And it's Mark, you're throwing Mark and Drummond on Jokic. And if he gets them in foul trouble or is toasting them, you go to your trump card, which is putting AD on Jokic. And we saw that formula work for the Lakers in the conference finals. So I think the center spot, I'm not as concerned with. It's the perimeter. And I think Kuz could also be in that conversation. You know, maybe he's right there with Alex. But for me, it's like KCP is the quote unquote shooter for this team. He is their primary floor spacer. And, you know, I think he's just a guy that he needs to be hitting shots. And he's the guy I have the most confidence in hitting shots and spacing the floor. So if he's not shooting, I think that does change kind of the dynamic of it just puts pressure on other guys to have to step up, where I think he's the best equipped to be that 3-and-D guy that they need on the wing. For me, it's Dennis, because I think we've seen with Dennis when he has really good games, like, you know, he kind of acts as that third star. Like he kind of, you know, people made a bit of the Tony Parker comparison with him. And I think, of course, he's not on Tony Parker's level, but at his best, he can function in that kind of Tony Parker role, where he is being that secondary creator and attacking in the pick and roll, getting downhill, hitting his floaters, making his layups, and then also pressuring the ball. And we've seen him play really good defense for most of the season. So Dennis is a guy that, you know, I feel like just given his role on the team, given the fact that he's an impending free agent, this is a huge postseason for him. And I think if he can largely be the good version of Dennis that we've seen, and taking smart shots, making smart decisions when he's going downhill, again, that's basically a third offensive star for this team, which I think, you know, they didn't have last season, and they were good enough to win without that. But I do think part of the reason the Lakers made the Danny Green trade was to ease the offensive burden on LeBron and AD, and you know, get another guy who could create easy shots for them, and a guy who could, you know, build with their core. So if Dennis can do that, I really think, again, this raises their offensive ceiling, because I think we've seen the defense is fine. Like the defense, no matter almost who you throw out there, the Lakers don't really have bad defenders in their, you know, rotation. And to me, the worst defender is probably Ben McLemore, and he's the 13th guy. So it's like, aside from that, Trez, THT, like they have their flaws, but when you're putting four good defenders around them, they look fine. So the Lakers like are going to figure out the defensive part. It's for me, the offense. And that kind of starts with Dennis and his ability to, specifically when LeBron's not on the floor, you know, in those 8 to 10 minutes, as you and I wrote a couple months ago, like what's happening in those 8 to 10 minutes with LeBron off the floor, and can Dennis, you know, guide the ship? So far, it's been a mixed bag. You know, I've actually not really been impressed with what the offenses look like led by Dennis, but that's been no AD. So maybe AD's back next week, and we're getting a little preview of like, can the Lakers build some successful AD Dennis lineups that they can use in the postseason when LeBron rests? And that to me is a fascinating subplot. So I'd go with Dennis. Who would you pick?
Well, I mean, it is interesting because, you know, there are some pretty important play. There are some. It's, you think of someone like Alex Caruso more as like the role player, right? The guy, as the guy who can like sort of step up and make those game changing plays. But in terms of like needing consistent output from, you're probably right. I mean, it's, you need Dennis to be everything that he's been billed as. You know, he needs to be efficient shooting the ball. He needs to get the turnovers down. And if, you know, he can do those things, it's kind of an obvious pick, I suppose. You know, I think I was thinking a little bit more like, oh, can Caruso become the Lakers' third most important player, or Markieff Morris? But, you know, with the way this roster is built, the Lakers have significantly more firepower than they did a year ago. You know, Dennis Schroeder is a vastly more dynamic offensive player than anyone else the Lakers had beyond LeBron and AD last year. So I think you're right. I agree with you. I had one quick point on KCP that I wanted to make sure to get in before we moved on, which is he was 1-for-5 from three last night against Charlotte. Before that, he'd had six straight games that he'd made multiple three pointers, longest stretch of the year by far, and he was shooting 55% from three over those six games and averaging 14.7 points. Now, you know, players get hot all the time. I'm not saying that means that he has turned it around, but when you consider that really before that, and let me pull this up, before that game, starting with the Sacramento game on the road trip. If you go back to the game in Milwaukee, which was kind of the last time he really got hot and really shot the ball well before this road trip, that was 32 games that he was shooting 31% from three. So I think you have to look at this sample size of this road trip where he shot 55% from three, you know, hopefully a sign that maybe he's getting a little closer to the KCP of the postseason when he was a really reliable, you know, spot up 3-point shooter. And you've seen him create actually a little bit for himself off the dribble on this trip, which is new. And so I think, you know, a little varied offensive game from KCP is a good thing. So if you're looking for if you want to see the Lakers win the championship, it's probably not just they need one guy to you know, kind of settle into that third role. I mean, it's a lot. You need a lot of guys to sort of become the best versions of themselves. And I think you saw that from KCP on this road trip.
100%. And I was surprised. So I did seven thoughts or seven things we learned from their seven game trip. And one of the categories was just the offensive scoring distribution. And I did a little table with everyone's scoring output on the trip. And I was surprised KCP was third on the list. It was Kuz, then Dennis, which, you know, we kind of expect. I actually thought Dennis would have been first, but he tailed off towards the end of the trip. But it was Kuz, Dennis, and then KCP third. And I guess the second takeaway for me, aside from the defensive takeaway, is just this team has so much offensive firepower. And I think you might not think that when you look at some of the games they've played recently and they're scoring. I mean, they're struggling to get to 100 points and the turnovers are bad and stuff. But like, as you know, Kuz has said, as Frank has said, as different guys have said this season, these guys are all like, you know, this roster was designed to be, you know, around LeBron and AD. These guys were not like, if this team is playing without LeBron and AD, like we've seen it, right? Like they're going to lose in the first round. They might lose in like five games or something. Like it's going to be ugly, but if they're, you know, with LeBron and AD, everyone kind of slots into their correct roles. And I just think like they had six guys averaging double figures on this trip.
Yeah.
They had another four guys averaging eight or more points. So you had 10 guys averaging 8+ points, which I think is just a testament to the offensive depth and versatility they have, where it felt like every game there was like two to three guys stepping up that hadn't stepped up in the previous couple games. And it was just kind of a rotating cast of, okay, tonight it's Dennis and KCP. You know, the next night it's Trez and Kuz. The next night it's Drummond and Ben McLemore against Brooklyn. Like it just was a rotating cast. And I think that to me bodes well for the Lakers moving forward because, you know, Frank has talked about this a lot, that he thinks this is going to pay dividends down the road for them in the postseason. This experience of having guys in roles and minutes they're not used to and pushing them out of their comfort zone, like that will help them in a key situation or two in the postseason. And I think, you know, we've seen that with San Antonio in the past when they would rest their stars and Patty Mills comes out and gets you 30 points and wins you a game on TNT. And, you know, and then that translated into the postseason. And, you know, when you need a big shot from Patty Mills, he's going to hit that shot. So I think for the Lakers, just the, you know, KCP got his groove back. He's been playing so much better. But just overall, having different guys be forced into uncomfortable situations, I think is an experience that actually could help them down the road. And even though it's been ugly, even though they've lost some games that they wouldn't have lost had LeBron and AD been healthy, I just think that experience could end up being actually more valuable than having LeBron and AD in a way. And you know, we'll only kind of see, we'll only know once this all plays out. But I think if you see a scenario in which, like, you know, THT or Kuz or whoever has a big game or steps up in a big moment, you know, it's going to partially stem from this stretch. And I think that's another kind of silver lining to all of this.
Turnovers remain a problem, last in the NBA in turnovers per game, which is because we're talking about how great the road trip was. I do want to couch it with the fact that there are still problems. Yeah. I'm curious, though, like we have not gotten updates really from the Lakers on the health of LeBron and AD. You know, every question is sort of met with, you know, they're still on their path to recovery. You know, we'll give updates when it's appropriate. There's really been no, and this is a different year where we aren't in the practice facility. We're not seeing, you know, what AD might be doing at the end of practice off to the side with Phil Handy or you know, whatever it is. So it's different in terms of like what we're able to actually glean from just being around. But what is your sense of these injuries? And do you have a fear at all? I mean, how confident are you that this is that they will both be back and the injuries will not be a problem through the playoffs, that they will be back, they'll be healthy, and the injuries will be behind them? Or is there any concern on your part that, you know, AD's dealing with a soft tissue injury in a very scary area? Is this something he's going to be dealing with and could potentially flare up throughout the rest of the season? And kind of the same with LeBron's ankle. What's your level of confidence that they are going to be at full strength going into the playoffs?
I think with LeBron, did we ever get the full severity of the injury? I don't think we did. No. In terms of the grade of the ankle sprain. I think just because he's LeBron, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that I think he's going to make a full recovery whenever he comes back, you know, most likely, you know, another 2 to 3 weeks, that, you know, he's going to just not look like he missed a beat and come back and just be LeBron. And maybe he's on a minutes restriction for a few games or whatever, but he's a mutant. Like he's just not, you know, he's Wolverine. Like he's different. So I think with LeBron and it being a ankle, you know, high ankle sprain to our knowledge, again, we don't know the full severity of it. And if it's more serious, then I'm going to have a different answer. But to what we know, I think, you know, high ankle sprain, you usually recover from that. It does take a while, but you know, he's already missed almost a month. So by the time he returns, it's going to be over a month. So I think with LeBron, I just kind of default to he's probably going to be fine and normal. AD is the tricky one because it's not just the injury, the, you know, basically two different injuries of having the calf strain and then also having the Achilles tendinosis. And based on, you know, the research I had done on Achilles tendinosis and then also knowing from the Kawhi situation where he had quad tendinosis, like this is something that can linger for not just weeks, not just months, but years. And this could be something that AD has to deal with for multiple years, if not the rest of his career, potentially, depending on how severe it is. So the AD one does give me some pause of, you know, it's also like he's missed so much time. I mean, we just said today's the 2 month mark. He's probably going to miss at least another week, if not a little bit longer. And at that point, you've just missed, you know, 40 plus games where it's hard to come back from that and you kind of, you know, hit the gate running. So he's going to have some type of ramp up, warm up period where he's going to probably be on a minutes restriction. He's going to need a few games, a few reps to get him going. So I think if there's a concern, it's AD and just the recurring nature of this injury and the potential for it to flare up again. But the calf strain is probably fine right now, right? Like it's probably the Achilles tendinosis that they're just trying to figure out how to manage. And it's a pain tolerance thing and just getting his leg maybe stronger and healthier. But I don't feel great about the AD situation. That is my biggest pause with saying the Lakers are the favorites. So I don't know if I'm kind of contradicting myself here, but I mean, yeah, that would be my only kind of thing. I think LeBron's fine, but with AD, you just don't know. What do you think? Where are you at with AD?
I think it's the same, right? I think his is much scarier than LeBron. LeBron has something that, you know, comes with a timeline. You know, even if they aren't sharing it with us, high ankle sprains are, you know, pretty easy to diagnose. And there's a lot of examples of, you know, that, you know, of what that actually requires. AD's feels far more nebulous. And I think, you know, you're especially dealing with a guy who has been, you know, prone to, you know, injury in his career and has a relatively low pain tolerance. I do worry about his being a thing that lingers a little bit longer or could flare up throughout. But, and I appreciate your perspective on that, because I think we talk so much about the Lakers. Oh, they're going to be fine. They're just going to be fine. And because it's LeBron, and because LeBron usually is fine, I think that that is a reasonable place to land. But I also think that you have to have a healthy understanding that you don't just, you know, flip a switch and go back to being, you know, LeBron and AD. I mean, that seems like kind of a fantasy. It does seem like there's going to need to be a little bit of a ramp up. Even if they're winning games, that doesn't mean they're ready to start winning, you know, finals games as soon as they're back on the floor. So it's going to be really interesting to watch. I mean, I just can't really think of an example where you have a team that has, you know, basically two superstars like this miss this much time and basically hit the floor again just in time for the playoffs. I mean, that is kind of crazy. It's going to be a fascinating experiment for the Lakers. But like you said, you know, probably still the favorites at strength, and we'll see. I mean, the playoffs are going to start here in about a month. Lakers play the Celtics tomorrow. They're home for a few games. Two against the Jazz. Like you said, they could lose all three of those. We might be singing a different tune by next week. But right now, the Lakers are on a relative upswing, winning 4 out of 7 on the road, kind of hanging around in the West, not sliding, not in the free fall that many of us anticipated. And like you said, that's an emphatic win for them. So for Jovan Buha, I'm Bill Oram. We'll be back next week to talk more about the Lakers. We'll have a better sense of what's going on with these injuries. We'll have a better sense of where the Lakers stand after this homestand and a better look heading toward the playoffs. But right now, I mean, despite all that's gone on, the Lakers are in a pretty reasonable and decent spot, and we'll see if that holds. Thank you for listening.